It is, as ever, my great pleasure to introduce my friend and colleague, Jim Wilson, the manager of Many Rivers Books and Tea, and the author of Lo, These Many Chapbooks. You see arrayed quite beautifully before you in many different colors and tones and titles. Jim has an incredibly varied career behind him on many levels, in many ways, in religious and spiritual endeavor, and as a writer. He has been writing...
Don't forget the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
I wouldn't think of forgetting the Trans-Alaska Pipeline if I had thought of it. But you have forestalled me, so I don't need to think of it. So, but he has been writing Japanese poetry, for example, I know, for probably something like 30 years, at least. And in more recent years has developed a fondness for a number of other poetic forms as well. Tonight he is reading from The Nations and Other Works, and we are delighted to have him as ever. Thank you.
Thank you. Rob mentioned my fondness for Japanese forms. The first form of poetry that I became interested in, and this was way back in high school, was Renga. And John Cage mentioned Renga, like in one of his works, I can't remember which one, after all these years. And it intrigued me. And when I was in high school, there was almost nothing available about Renga. I mean, you really had to search it out. And the information was very incomplete, you know, but what information I got was attractive to me. And then the decades passed, and I can't remember when it was. It must have been sometime in the mid to early to mid-70s. Earl Miner, who is a scholar and translator, I think he died about 8 years ago, published a work called Japanese Linked Verse.
So he was a minor scholar?
He was a minor, well, he was a minor scholar, exactly. So, you beat me to the punchline, because there's a group of Renga writers in America who call themselves the Minor School of Renga. Renga writers, you know, like that. And that was a very complete presentation of a number of approaches to Renga. The word Renga means linked elegance. So Ren is a Japanese word for to link, and Ga is elegance. Renga is also a modern version, a modern term for it is Renku, and Renku means linked verse. So I'm not going to go into a lot of explanation. I just want to give a background, because you have various types of Renga, from 12 verses to 100 verses. And one of the things which you learn in Renga is there's certain topics, there's certain verses and certain placements have to be about certain topics. And one of those topics is the moon. So in order to not be repetitious or dull, you start learning a lot about the moon and its phases and its moods, and the autumn moon versus the spring moon versus the summer moon, and the lingering moon, the frantic moon, the dream moon. For me, that spilled over into other forms of poetry, you know, because I was spending so much, I was really concentrated. I've written hundreds of Renga by now. So, in order not to be repetitious to myself or to people who were reading them, I really explored this. And I just found myself writing verses about the moon in many different forms as kind of a spillover for that. So I decided to collect them in this series called Lunations. And and I will read some of them for you. I'm going to separate the poems by the sound of the bell. Anyway, so. On the mountain path, I walked on and on and on. At the great cliff's edge, I stepped onto the moonlight, a traveler in space. Blossoms of the Plum. Hey, Chuck. Hey, Michael. Hey, come on in. Okay. My friend, welcome.
Thank you.
I'll have to do the first poem over again.
I wanted you to do it
Please.
Twice anyway.
Okay. If I read a poem and you want to make a comment or you want me to read it over, I'm very relaxed as... Was it over 2 weeks ago or last week? I can't remember.
Last week.
We had a speaker last week. He said he was very. He said, "I'm Jewish, so it's okay to interrupt me."
So. And then he would interrupt the question.
Fair is fair. But I'm not Jewish, but it's still okay. If you want to feel like. So this, I was explaining that. For a long time, ever since high school, I've been writing Renga, and in linked verse, there are certain verses which have to be about the moon. So all these years, I've been writing verses about the moon, and it spilled over into other forms outside of Renga, and then I collected those into this group of poems called Lunations. So.
Called what?
Lunations. On the mountain path, I walked on and on and on. At the great cliff's edge, I stepped onto the moonlight, a traveler in space. I do want to make a comment about that one. The word Dakini means traveler in space.
I like that. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Blossoms of the Plum. In the first warm wind, the sound of the melting snow. Moonlight like a river through the windows flows. Prayer flags in the wind. Upon the window, moonlight shimmers through the trees. Safe in his dreams, he is completely at ease. Blossoms of the plum, in the first warm wind, the sound of the melting snow, moonlight like a river through the curtains flows. What did people do with all their evening hours before the TV? They told each other stories as the moon rose in the sky. Blossoms of the plum tree, thick snow on the branches, a few wisps of steam rise. As a warm wind, the first of the season, carries the sound of ice cracking through her still closed window, the light of the first quarter moon and the glow of the angel beside her lights a path in the land of dreams, a land where time ebbs and flows like the tides, where all those she had loved wait patiently for her as her last few breaths quietly subside.
Read that one again.
Blossoms of the plum tree, thick snow on the branches. A few wisps of steam rise as a warm wind, the first of the season, carries the sound of ice cracking through her still closed window, the light of the first quarter moon and the glow of the angel beside her lights a path in the land of dreams, a land where time ebbs and flows like the tides, where all those she had loved wait patiently for her as her last few breaths quietly subside.
Name on that?
Peaceful Passing.
Jim, is that an experience with respect to your mother's passing?
I wasn't with my mother when she passed, but it is a an imagination,
yeah.
An imaginary. She did pass very peacefully, my mother. She was only confined to bed for about less than 5 days. A sliver of moon after days of dark, a stranger wanders through the city park. Thin clouds, slow dusk, moonrise, stars hushed. A bright satellite by the waxing half-full moon, apple trees in bloom.
Hey.
Hey. Welcome. Moonlight on the bed, on the threadbare patchwork quilt, a gift from a friend whose name I can't remember. It was many years ago. Clouds in the cold sky, the half-full moon is obscured, three calls from an owl. Morning, prior to dawn, after the moon has set, a cold darkness throughout the house, no dreams. The waning March moon, sunrise still an hour away, a stream of headlights. Under the spring moon, who wrote the book of love? I just think of you. Not much happens when you turn off the TV. First there is silence, then there's a disturbing calm, the sound of the rising moon. My morning shower, bright through the bathroom window, the April full moon. Reading poetry at Many Rivers Bookstore, friends for the evening, the paths of the waxing moon and the slow drift of the stars. Dry leaves slowly falling, at night the rising moon, full in the Libra air, a gentle wind with a hint of moisture blowing through the open window, the sound of my neighbor softly singing a lullaby I heard long ago from my grandmother when we would go visiting during the summer vacation season, a season that felt like it would last forever, ending when the leaves turned to red and gold. The gathering clouds obscure the moon and shrouds my understanding of who I am and where I've been and where I will be going. I should live alone. Not that I'm a misanthrope, nor do I lack hope in the power of the heart. I need time to see the moon. The almost half moon shedding silver light on the garage wall at almost midnight. That was our neighbor's. Moon, full moon, summer moon, a few thin clouds, in the distance, the weird cry of the loon. The blooming white rose, how many times have I seen the summer full moon? A hot day in June, with the falling of the night, the rising full moon. White on white, rose petals, butterflies flight, beneath the rays of the summer moon's light.
Again.
White on white, rose petals, butterflies flight, beneath the rays of the summer moon's light. The coyote sings a lullaby to the moon, slowly sliding down to the western horizon. A jet keeps pace with the night. Moonlight on my bed wakes me from my dream, memories of you and a summer breeze. This is what I've learned. Human beings are not special. They resemble trees, or the grasses in the field, or a moonlit summer breeze. It's not so often that I get to see the moon. Clouds come in too soon, or the city lights consume the splendor of the nightscape. A few days ago, the moon vanished from the sky. They put it somewhere. Scientists had determined it interfered with progress. A night of no dreams, a morning of thick darkness, a peacock cries once, trying to bring back the moon from wherever it's hiding. Waves, ripples on the pond in the moonlight, owls. On the silent street, a deer quietly grazes. Among the ruins, all the windows are hollow, open to the moonlit wind. That's called Futurescape. On the silent street, a deer quietly grazes among the ruins. All the windows are hollow, open to the moonlit wind. Full moon, clear skies, cold wind, dreams rise. The moon, the autumn moon, Libra, the waxing moon, a few days short of full, a few thin clouds at the edge of the moon, a plane almost touches its face, but slowly curves away, heading towards the coastal city. A gently rising tide fills the harbor, lapping against the wooden pier, the sound of a few seals in the distance. At 3 a.m, two strangers appearing decide to share their interrupted dreams.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Obviously there are some poems that begin with the same line about the plum blossoms. Are those
right.
linked in some way? And then how?
Yeah, that's plum blossoms are at the cusp of winter and spring, so they hold a lot of transformational meaning. You know, like plum blossoms in the snow. You know, like so, in, so you get both energies. But the winter plum blossoms are a signal that the winter is kind of falling away, but the presence of the snow, so spring isn't, you know, quite here. It's a very, it has a lot of dynamic energy, plum blossoms, for that reason. Cherry blossoms are a little more solidly spring, you know, like, they're a little more deep into spring. You know, in the, there's a collection of tanka, which in Japan, at the time this collection was made, which I think was in the early 900s, and it's called Kokinshu, or Kokin Wakashu, because tanka used to be called waka. And the opening tanka are about plum blossoms. And then the poet, I'm sorry I don't have it with me, so I can't read from it, but the question is, for the first half dozen of these tanka, the poets ask the question, when is it spring? Is it by the calendar, or is it because the calendar says spring has begun, but there's snow on the ground, but the plum blossoms are blossoming. You know, like so, their work playing with that kind of theme. You know, like, and, so that left an impression on me. That's part one. Now I'm looking for something.
Jim, I'm wondering your references and the experiences you described with the snows. Were these the snows that you experienced in Illinois?
Yes.
Were they those in Alaska?
Both. Uh-huh. Yeah, some of them are tundrascapes, you know, uh-huh. Some of them are from north of Chicago as I grew up. They're not too much here.
north
of Chicago, yeah.
That's Canada.
No. Canada is definitely north of Chicago. That's true.
The people of Wisconsin would argue with that.
So, these are different forms, and what I thought I would do, the first part of my talk will be part one of the nations, And then I just want to talk a little bit about syllabic verse and what I call the pulse of the line and how that works for me. And then I'll finish with some readings from part two. In East Asia, that is China, Korea, Japan, and Vietnam, they had a theory of poetics. So most of their poetry is written in five character lines, which in Chinese would be five syllables, or seven character lines. And what I was reading was that their view is that if you take two measures of 4/4 time, then a five syllable line is 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and a seven syllable line is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and that's how they felt it. And during the Tang Dynasty and into the Sung Dynasty, a poem could be sung, you know, based on that rhythm. So I applied that, and can you see this? Is this big enough? You know, like so. You have a one. This is 1 through 10 for syllables. So in the five syllable line, it's like this. So you go. Da 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 da, and the seven syllable line would be da 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 da. So and then that's what I call the pulse of the line. And to make a melody, you would play with that. So like a five syllable line would be like da 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 la da 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 la da 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 la da 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 da. So and similarly with the seven syllable line, you could la da 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 la da 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 la da 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 da. Ooh, 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 ooh. Like so, and that's how they would sing these songs. You know, like in East Asia, they would sing these poems. In Japan today, there's still ceremonial chanting of tanka.
Can you sing some of your poems to us?
I might manage it. So the tanka form is 5, 7, 5, 7, 7. So you would have, people can see this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it'll be da 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 da. And then to make a melody about it, out of it would be something like the grove of redwood, silent and ancient stillness, soothing and serene. I once saw a goddess there, eyes of night and starlight hair. So when I write poetry, this is how I do it. I have the melody of the form, or at the minimum, I have the pulse of the form in my head. You know, like, and then in other words, I'm writing to the pulse. I'm writing the poem to the pulse.
It sounds so much like when you used to chant the Kuan Yin.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. And, well, Namo Kuan Yin Pu Sa is seven syllables. Mm-hmm.
That's why it sounds like, very much like that.
And
yeah.
I discovered that almost all mantras in Japan and in East Asia are either five syllables long or seven syllables long. And they can slot them right into those traditional melodies. You know, like, join me here for how this unfolds, if you feel like joining. So we begin with the one syllable line and we'll go through to the ten. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's an ethery. So the ethery form of poetry is a 10-line poem. It begins with one syllable, then each line adds one more syllable, so it goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. I just found this has been very helpful to me in understanding how different forms work, you know, like, and how they feel. Like, this is the cinquain. The cinquain was the first syllabic form created in English in the early 20th century by a woman by the name of Adelaide Crapsey. Mm-hmm. You know of her?
I've heard of her.
Yeah. And she lived a very short life. I don't think she was 30 when she died. I think she was like 28 or 29, something like that. She died of tuberculosis. She did produce some interesting poetry, and she invented this form called the cinquain. She was the first English-speaking poet to sort of pull away from the idea of metrical poetry, you know, like, which, do people know what I mean by metrical poetry? What you're doing is you're counting pulses, you aren't counting syllables. So you're counting, like, da-dum, 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 da-dum. You know, like, so a good example is, whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. You know, like, and what you're counting is four pulses in a line. You know, like, and you're not counting the syllables, you're counting the pulse. And Adelaide Crapsey suggested that it was possible in English to not do that, that you could just count the syllables. Japanese is syllabic, just count syllables. French poetry, just count syllables. But English poetry, German poetry, some languages count pulses. You know, like, so she invented this poetic form called the cinquain. So in order to get a feel for it, I decided to sing it. So the line scheme is 2, 4, 6, 8, and 2. So it would be la 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 And doing that helped me to understand what she was getting at. That last line has this strongly sort of cadential feeling to it. You know, like it really closes the whole, it builds up, each line doubles, and then there's this kind of very drawn out cadence at the end. You know, it's a very nice feeling, you know, like that she produces here. So are there any questions on that, or does
what
that make
would be
sense?
An example? What can you read an example of a symphony?
Let's see.
Next, can you sing an Ethery? Well, why are you afraid to have that symphony?
Morning, prior to dawn, after the moon has set, a cold darkness throughout the house, no dreams.
So, but if you were to sing that?
Yeah, it would be, morning, prior to dawn, after the moon has set, a cold darkness throughout the house, no dream. Something like that. It helped me to understand the real trick of writing a cinquain is in that last line. You know, like that if the last line is too much linked to the previous line, then you don't get that the cadential feeling isn't there, and it seems to all of a sudden it seems like this should be a 10-syllable line that you've just sort of fudged. You know, like that. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And no, I can't sing an Ethery. I'll work on it. Are there comments or questions on that?
Cool. This is going to show up in paintings, I think.
Oh, good.
I don't know how, but I just have that.
Well, there's a rhythm to space, mm-hmm. as well as a rhythm to that's embodied in time. So I can see how that would might work. I'm sure you'll figure it out. This road through the village connects with other roads, with other villages, with other towns, trucks and cars and buses, constantly moving back and forth, spring, summer, fall, winter, around and around and around, a moment of silence followed by sound, coming, going, ebbing, flowing, mountain ranges replaced by the ocean. Uncountable stars in celestial motion drift past my window on a moonless night. Moonlight through the mist, moonlight through the pine, strange shapes drift and twist, strange shapes intertwine. A thick line of clouds covers half of the full moon. The tease of reason as I attempt to explain why I made that decision. Moonlight on excuse me, moonlight on my bed wakes me from my dream. Memories of you, the sound of a stream. Cool, thin clouds, 5 a.m., a bright full moon, slowly descending, the first hint of sunlight pales the few remaining stars. In an hour, the moon will be gone, like the moments of this silent dawn, like the last notes of a solo flute's song.
Is that an echo?
That's an echo. Good call.
An ethery. That's from verse 1, 2, 3. Each line is longer.
The almost new moon, a sliver of sailing light, doesn't dim the stars. Only the sleepless see it, anxiously waiting for the dawn. The rock of the empty sky, on a night without a moon, holds the home where I reside, on the pond, a single loon. Stars, bright, angels, satellites, in constant motion, the sliver moon has descended. An astronomer tests a scientific notion. I pray for silence, for moments of solitude, for lunar shadows and a luminous darkness, the beating heart of the void. I like the cold nights, the more so when there's no moon, no clouds in the sky. The whole planet seems to drift, floating on galactic tides. Jupiter below, the first sliver of the moon above the white-feathered owl. Bell, sky, starlight, clarity, on a moonless night, galaxy spinning out of sight. Stars, no moon, without wind, the sound of wings, an angel pauses and begins to sing. Stars, no moon, ancient light, I am older, a stream surrounds a moss-covered boulder. Why am I awake so late on this moonless night? What disturbed my dreams? Listen. The wild foxes bark. Saturn rises in the dark. The last touch of dusk before the sky turns deep dark on this moonless night, a slow plane with blinking lights drifting among the first stars. Cold, 12th month, a long night, frost on the ground. The moon in the sky does not make a sound. Feral dogs snarling, hidden behind the plum trees, the winter moonlight. The frantic moon, after waking from a nightmare, the cold of my room. Cold. Colder all day long, winter deepens. Now the sun has set. Though the moon's almost full, it's hidden behind thick clouds. A light rain has begun falling. I put on additional warm clothes and watch as the rain slowly turns to snow. Moonlight on the parking lot, after seeing a movie, leads me to forget the plot, immersed in awesome beauty.
Yay.
That was over here, I came out of the theater. Moonlight on the parking lot, after seeing a movie, leads me to forget the plot, immersed in awesome beauty. In the crimson sky, scattered stars of green and blue, pterodactyls fly on tidal winds drawn from the moon across the mountain range of time. Night falls on the harbor. Night falls, quick in winter. Saturn slowly descends into the fog, hovering at the edge where the ocean blends with the sky. A stone stairway ascends, stepping past the sun and the moon. Planets and galaxies dwindle and fade, scattered petals from wind-blown blooms. All that's constructed and all that is made disappears in the depths of a hidden lagoon, there at the harbor of eternity. That one's called Safe Harbor.
The chapbook,
that masterpiece.
Can't see it.
Lunations.
Oh, the same one.
Yep.
There's two.
Volume two.
There's two.
Oh, there's
it's
two volumes.
Series one. There's two volumes. You can't get enough of the moon.
Well, it's interesting because there's the photosite called the Nocturnes.
Yeah.
And it's about photographing during the full moon. And
it's an online site. Or?
Yes. I don't recall whether it's a com or org or what. Fabulous imagery by many, many photographers. It almost illustrates so many of the
I should send some of my poems to them, see if they'll like
to. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because they do put quotes up.
I'm sensing a multimedia presentation.
A multimedia presentation, there we go, yeah.
Song, image, and word.
Absolutely.
Dance, too, maybe.
So, Jim?
Yeah?
I know that you and I share interest in astrology, but when you refer to planets in these poems you just read, are you... Is there any other implied
astrological significance.
Or just any sort of association with those planets. I don't tend to hear it.
No, I was probably thinking scientifically, at least I think so. I mean, I am a double Cancer, so writing two volumes of poetry about the moon does seem somehow fitting.
Right.
You know? I mean, well, double Cancer, two volumes. the moon rules the sign Cancer. Hence the connection.
So you mentioned Saturn in the last piece you read.
Right.
But there was one, I thought astrological, actually, one of them, where Saturn's descending or something like that.
Saturn appears in these poems. Saturn does have meaning. Saturn is the keeper of time. The deity.
Cronus.
Yeah. Is the keeper of time. Saturn slowly descends into the lagoon. Saturn has to do that if you're going to end up at the harbor of eternity.
But there was a previous one also that I think has that same...
Right, but it has pretty much the same associations for me.
Okay.
You know, like, in that last one, it was conscious, but... I want to do one closing experiment, but I have too many pieces. I wanted to give you one additional thing to get a feel for how syllabic poetry works, and this is I'm looking for the Fibonacci.
That could be a good title.
There is a concept I've developed about syllabic forms, which I call syllabic analogs. And syllabic analogs are poetic forms that have the same number of syllables, but the distribution in the lines is different. So they have an overall count that is the same, and it just so happens that there's three that I use in this collection that have 20 syllables, and the simplest one is the quatrain that has 5 syllables per line. Da 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 da. Chinese poetry is very regular, traditional Chinese poetry, very regular. The line count is regular. They have rhyme, in traditional Chinese poetry, each one of these lines would be a full statement. Run-on lines are extremely rare in traditional Chinese poetry. So there's this kind of very steady, think of like somebody walking on a path, just sort of dum 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 dum, just sort of, keeping going like that. And when you read Chinese poetry in this syllabic sort of way, you do get this sort of forward motion, a steady walk, whereas the tanka, with the 5-7-5-7-7, it feels to me more like paddling a canoe, where you get a little bit of a push and then there's a glide, and then you pull it. The motion is a little more varied, but anyway, that's the first 20 count, and this form is called tetractus, from a Greek concept where the first 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 10 is the count, because 4 plus 3 plus 2 plus 1 equals 10. So, but syllabically it goes. And the last one is the Fibonacci. So, we just got a book in the store about the Fibonacci form in flowers. The Fibonacci sequence, Stuart can probably explain it better than I can, but if you start with 0, then you go to 1, and 0 plus 1 is 1, so then you have 1, 1, and 1 plus 1 is 2, then you have 1 plus 2 equals 3, and 2 plus 3 equals 5, and then 3 plus 5 equals 8, and then 8 plus 5 equals 13, and it proceeds out like that. Which sounds very abstract, yet it's found in nature all over the place, the Fibonacci sequence. You know, there's an online poetry journal affectionately called The Fib, which is poems written in accordance with the Fibonacci sequence. So most of them are 6 lines long. So if you have 6, it would be 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, and 8, which is 20 syllables. So and it would unfold. It really interesting that all three of these forms are 20 syllables long, and yet they have very distinct feelings. You know, like when you think of them this way, you know, I mean, the number of lines is different for each one. You know, one is 4, one is 5, and one is 6 lines. And the feel for them when I'm writing poetry, it's like the topic will almost attract itself to a particular form. You know, like that cinquain form is really brings things to a close. You know, like, and the Tetrachthys and the Fibonacci, they are, you know, it's like that last line, you feel like you could go farther. You know, like that it doesn't have that cadential quality for it. It's like the last line happens to be the last line, but you could, you know, like write another line.
That's funny. I think that's why I like the double ethery better than the ethery.
Uh-huh.
Is because then it seems more complete.
Mm. Now, I have a form for you.
Yeah.
As long as you brought it up.
Well, now that you mentioned the double ethery goes from 1 to 10 to back to 1.
Mm-hmm. Back to 1. Some people, when they do a double ethery, repeat the 10 mm-hmm. line. They go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and then they go 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, and some use the 10 as a pivot. You know, like, they go 9, 10, 9. You know, mm-hmm. There's another form which doesn't appear in here. I've used it very rarely. For some reason, I've actually found it very difficult. And it's called rectameter. And it was there was two guys created it. One was named Rick, and one was named Mike. So the they're still alive, cousins. It was invented in the 90s, you know, like, and so the form is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 8, 6, 4, 2. Okay, so, and
you have a form for me.
And according to a strict reading of the hexameter, the opening line and the closing line are supposed to be the same. You know, like, so you even get a stronger sense of cadence. But this one would be da 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 da. It is nice. It's very nice. And I don't know why I've written a few of them. You know, none were about the moon. You know, like, so they're not included here. But I found it to be remarkably challenging. You know, like, I'm not sure why. Perhaps I should focus on it more. But I look forward to hearing what you have to offer with Damodar Wise. So, other questions or comments or
makes me want to go back to my copy and reread some of them.
Okay, good.
Oh, is that whole pile different forms?
No, I did some duplicates.
Oh, that's a lot of forms.
Yeah, there are a lot of syllabic forms in English. Everson, Adelaide Crazy, I consider her the grandmother of English syllabic poetry. You know, like, and she was very interesting. She, I mean, to us, we're used to free verse and all kinds of experiments and poetry and that sort of thing. But remember, she was writing at the very beginning of the 20th century. You know, like, and free verse was, you know, coming up, but it was a big challenge to her. And one of the things she did was she counted in epic poems like Paradise Lost and others, she actually went through and counted the number of one and two syllable words that were used in the poems. And she did this this work on prosody, English prosody. And she didn't finish it though. She died before she finished it. She did these analyses, and, you know, this was before computer scans or anything like that. So what it meant is that at night she was sitting there going, one, two, and then in the margin she would write, you know, how many single syllable and how many. And she discovered that Milton's usage of one and two syllable words was over 80% of the words in that epic are either one or two syllables. Now, why was that important to her? Because in some ways English strongly resembles Chinese in that English has a very high percentage of one-syllable words compared to any other European language. And that's because English doesn't have, is relatively uninflected. Inflections create syllables, you know, like, and so Italian, Spanish, French, German, all those languages that have a richer range of inflection also have more syllables on the average per word. So it was the groundwork for her. It was like dawning in her that because of the way English works and sort of how it's structured, you could use this syllabic approach to. But she had to do all that work. I mean, it strikes us as kind of, you know, something that shouldn't take so much effort, but it did for her. It took her, you know, like, she had to sort of unpack the English language, you know, like, and sort of really see how poets were using it and how it was working, and then.
This is so interesting to me because since I was quite young, I've really liked to try to stick more to the short, old English words.
Mm-hmm.
And stay away from the multisyllabic Latin-oriented words.
Right.
You know.
Right. I mean, I have the same tendency.
Yeah.
You know,
it just feels meatier and cleaner.
Uh-huh.
And
there's a quatrain I wrote. Let's see. as the day draws to an end, as the month comes to a close, I turn to look at a vase, blue and gold, with one white rose. And after I finished it, I realized they're all one-syllable words. The entire quatrain is one-syllable words. And I've also found it much easier when I'm able to do that, to put it to a melody. Mm-hmm. Now, like, when all the words are one syllable, you can arrange it on a melodic pattern. It lays very easily on that, but with a multi-syllable word, you sort of have to make sure that the curve of the melody doesn't disrupt the meaning of the word. You know, if you follow what I'm saying.
Makes me think of an ethery where each line is a word.
Oh, so that you could do
one
right.
Syllable, two syllable, three syllable, okay. And at the end,
ten syllable word.
And that is establishmentarian.
Oh, that's 10 syllables. Well, that's very good. Yeah.
If you need 13, we had the ism, right?
Well, I have a request for future expansion of what you're doing here, which is I would like to see at least a combination of song, music and song with the spoken poetry. Not so that the song or music drowns out the poetry, but it strikes me as interesting. I mean, we know that poetry was always song in every ancient manifestation of it that we know of. And so I'd be curious. I don't know of any contemporary people doing the sort of thing that you're doing there, but it's very intriguing. It strikes me that you could employ a musician or two to work with you in presenting. I mean, what I'm saying is the song could be an accompaniment. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Music.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a little monkey wrench to throw into things, you know, I like to do that. The way you've got them laid out there, there's an assumption that they're all 4-4
two
measures, and you could do it quite differently.
Yes.
And what would that look like?
Yeah, you could explore that, and I encourage people to explore it. What I was doing, I was basing it on the East Asian model.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then I thought, well, what if you applied that model to a two-syllable line or an eight-syllable line? See, the insight for me was that if each line is given the same amount of time, you know, like, then that's the connection between the music and the pulse of the poem, and that's how I entered into it. You know, like, but I realized you could do it in 3-4, or you could do it in 6-8. You know, you could explore that.
What that does for me is just suggest that you know, to be a lot more conscious of the time that lines take,
right,
and deliberate about how that works,
right. It's definitely affected how I read poetry in general, not just in public, but to myself. On Rob's point about poetry being originally song, all the big forms that people still plug into were originally song forms. The sonnet was originally an Italian song form called sonetto, which meant little song. And the villanelle was a song form, and so is the sestina. And because you have the refrains built into those forms, you know, like, and so that they have that song background to them. And the tanka was anciently called waka, but the very first Japanese name for that form was uta, and the word uta is Japanese for song. You see that all over the world, that, you know, like, if you trace back the history of the most prominent forms, the sijo in Korea was always sung until the late 19th century. You know, like, and they had pre-existing melodies. And this was also true of the five-line and seven-line quatrains in Chinese. There were pre-existing melodies, and what a poet's job was to write words that would fit these pre-existing melodies.
I just had a kind of strange thought. And it's related to some of the conversations we've had about, you know, all of nature being a form of language and things wanting to be sung to. I wonder if this non-singing form of verbal communication that we're so commonly participating in, if that's not a deterioration, and that most communication was at one time sung.
Well, I'll throw this out for consideration, and that is that if you look at how poetry is treated in popular song, and then you look at how poetry is treated in self-consciously poetic culture, there's a huge gulf now. And that did not used to be the case. That gulf is maybe 150 years old. It's certainly no older than that. It used to be the case that they were very intimately connected, that any poem could be sung and any song could be read as a poem. And they would go back and forth. Somewhere, as we became more literate and more focused on literary production, that I'm not saying that anybody consciously made that decision, it's just that culturally that's what happened.
I mean, another thing that sort of goes with what I was saying is, like, lullabies.
Yeah.
It almost seems like there's a return to the primitive impulse, where, and maybe primal is a better word, where primal use of verbal sounds was sung.
Yeah.
So when you've got a baby, you return to that.
Yeah.
So even the most non-singing people tend to sing lullabies.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you. Closing comments or observations? So I have a few little booklets over there, people. And copies of Lunations. And I want to thank everybody for coming tonight. I enjoyed reading them, and I hope you enjoyed listening to them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie Rivers. And I will point out that we have a donation bowl over on the counter. We encourage you to contribute to it because we split the proceeds that you donate with our speakers to further their work and retain some to maintain the store so we can continue to do these events. And thank you all for coming to Many Rivers. We look forward to seeing you at further events and when we don't have all the shells pushed aside. And you can take a look at our other things. So,
including our poetry section.
Thank you so much. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.